flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and we're keeping an eye on what's happening in the D.C. area near Reagan Airport, where if you hadn't heard, and it did happen late last evening, that there was a collision midair between an American Airlines regional jet and a military Black Hawk helicopter. There were 64 people on board between passengers and crew. That flight that was coming in from Wichita, Kansas to Reagan and DCA, and right off of the river. And the Black Hawk helicopter was on a training exercise with 3 people on board. And I'm watching the live video. There are hundreds of rescue personnel and vehicles on scene, first responders in the water. That part we know. And I'm now hearing and reading, so two elements, lots of different sources. So I'm sure the information, even at this point, is spotty because it's still a rescue mission. They're in the water doing what they can. The helicopter, I've seen now photos of the plane fuselage in the water. The helicopter was reportedly upside down, nearly submerged, but bobbing all around in the water. So it was a challenge, maybe unsafe for rescue crews to get in there. I haven't heard whether or not they were able to access that helicopter, but the plane was in 2 pieces in 7 feet of water. And like I said, there are photos of at least part of the plane now in the water, closer to the shore of the Potomac. And I know that there are divers in the water, but what we're finding out, again, through multiple sources being reported online, is that there was a group of figure skaters on that plane. Now, I've heard conflicting reports about who these figure skaters were and where they were going. It appears there are several Russian media reports that they actually had some of their national representatives, their own figure skaters, their champion figure skaters on that flight. But I don't know if that's true or not. So it's really hard to tell because the information, as you can imagine, is spotty at this point, and there's a lot of scrambling trying to figure out who was where and confirm potentially if these people were on the flight. And then you're talking about international and that type of information. It does appear from multiple reports that there were young people on the flight and that there may have been kids and their families flying back from Wichita as part of what was either a training or a competition. And so we'll wait to get the details. But as I say, there are now Russian reports coming through Reuters and other news services that ice skating coaches and a pair of former world champions were on board the American Airlines plane as it crashed into the Potomac River. So this is coming from Russian state media just a few minutes ago. Coaches and former world champions were on board the flight. And that there were also young figure skaters and their families who were on that flight. I've seen a report that the two world champions were married figure skaters. I'm not going to try to pronounce their names completely, but Yevgenia and Vadim. And this is coming from Russia, from Kremlin media reports. So keeping an eye on the news and online to see what we, you know, what else might be confirmed. They also have a son who competes in figure skating, and there's some speculation that he was with them. They go back to the late 1990s. They finished up their competitive skating careers and then moved to the United States and became coaches. And right now there's some speculation that the family was on the flight. But there's also been a variety of posts. Some of you are sending them to me. I'm careful what I share when it comes from social media. But there are, like I say, multiple reports and multiple posts on social that indicate there were skaters, maybe young skaters, coaches, and their families returning from a camp that was held in Wichita after the U.S. Figure Skating Championships. I don't have any other names other than the two Russian skaters who had turned coaches. I know watching on the news now, there's a staging area right there on the shores of the Potomac with D.C. in the background. And again, hundreds of rescue vehicles and lights and just 300 different responders, they're saying, on scene. I have seen a few stretchers with body bags on them, and they've set up a mobile morgue there next to the riverside, the riverbank. And so we'll pass along what we know as we know it. They've set up a hotline now for family members to call. So I can imagine at this point they're attempting to identify the victims and want to try to pass that information along to anxious family members as quickly as they can. I didn't listen to this one video that I saw pop up on social because I just didn't think I could while I was getting ready for the show. But there was a man who was sitting in the airport at Reagan, and a reporter approached him, and the headline on the video was, he's waiting for his wife, and she's presumably on that flight. Again, I didn't want to watch the video because I didn't think it would be the right thing for me before the show. But as you can imagine, that's happening. There are people in the airport that were waiting for this flight to land because it was only a couple hundred feet above the runway when it was hit when it collided with the Black Hawk helicopter. And details are spotty, but there are a lot of people on the ground there. Of course, the investigation was kicked into high gear as quickly as they possibly could. The water right now, according to the reports, is about 35 degrees Fahrenheit, which you don't have to be a scientist to know that really quickly that can lead to hypothermia. And those types of, like the temp in the water like that, it's makes survival even more challenging. I'd also heard one, I think it was a former pilot, maybe an investigator, talk about the fact that even if you know where the exit to the plane is. The plane is broken in half. It's crashed into the water. This is a hard landing, not like the one we saw. I'm not saying it wasn't a hard landing when Sully landed the, it was a much bigger jet in the Hudson River, but at least it was an attempted landing. This was a crash. And the water, the impact on the water can be just as devastating as the impact of this helicopter in the air. And that in that type of situation, the passengers would have been disoriented. Of course, they're strapped in. They've got their seatbelts on, but it's really hard. Even if you know where the exits are, to somehow get out of your seatbelt and the water's coming in, and maybe it's only 7 feet of water, but if you are in the complete dark, maybe you've hit your head, maybe not, but you're trying to find your way out in 7 feet of water as the water's coming into the plane, that if there were people who survived the impact, that poses another challenge, is to try to get out of the fuselage or get out of the plane. And not like what you see or what we saw with the landing on the Hudson River, where they at least landed on the belly of the plane and it remained intact. So just, it's really sad. I feel sick over it, but at the same time, I know many of you are paying attention or want updates. And so I'm trying to follow it myself here in studio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can find me online at A Law Radio and then also on our Facebook page. I am always so appreciative those first responders who, not quite middle of the night, but in the dark, suit up, get in the water, forgetting their own safety or discomfort. This is what they train for. And it's pretty incredible the mass of people that has gathered there to do what they can to see if they can find survivors. I have not seen anything at all about victims, numbers, names, only that they're still conducting search and rescue and everything they possibly can do to try to get into the water. The videos, the pictures, they're heart-wrenching. Our phone number is 855-212-4227, and I'll keep you updated. I've been doing some praying, too, praying for a miracle and praying for the families who've been changed forever by what's happened just a few hours ago. Just so odd and strange to even think about talking about sports. So if you don't mind, Pete, can we take an early break? And we still have some football news that we'll want to work in and a conversation with our friend JP Shadrick, who will join us from Jacksonville as we get closer to the early morning hours of the show and the reaction to Liam Cohen. And I know the press conference was panned and he was poked fun at for his way that he said Duval and just his adjusting to being in that situation for the first time. And the way it went down, too, the fact that he initially pulled his name out of consideration with the Jaguars and then decided that he would go back to Tampa Bay. He agrees to a contract that will make him the highest paid coordinator in the NFL, only to go a bit AWOL and not respond to the attempts by different Tampa Bay coaches to reach out to him. He kind of ghosted them for a bit. In the meantime, the owner of the Jaguars does an about face and fires the general manager after indicating that he would keep Trent Baalke on hand, only to then announce that they were hiring Liam Cohen. So the situation, the kind of circumstances leading up to it, weird. And then they end up with Liam and he gets introduced and he's got a lot of enthusiasm and he makes the comment that he wants savages, but comes up with this kind of goofy rendition of Duval. Of course, the county where the Jaguars play. So the reaction in Jacksonville, I'm sure, was interesting, even more so considering that the Jaguars had a brutal season. so many close games that would have their fans on the edge of their seats, only to have them end in disappointment with a defense that was awful this season, with Trevor Lawrence and an offensive line that did not protect him, and all of the challenges there, both physically and mentally, for a quarterback that doesn't get the time, but also doesn't believe necessarily that his offensive line is going to protect him. What happened to the run game? So all of these things kind of snowballing together to disastrous effects for the Jaguars. Doug Peterson pays the price, and the buck certainly stops with him. This is why coaches get paid big bucks, because they're the ones that bear the brunt. So all of that leading up to Cohen's introduction, and it's his first time. And so you can imagine that he's a little nervous too, and maybe there's some awkwardness as well. So we'll get the reaction from JP Shadrick, who is not only a senior reporter for the Jaguars radio network, but also does their sideline reporting, their pre and post. So he's really embedded in every facet of covering the Jaguars. He'll join us a little bit later on the show. In addition, what we're talking about, challenges and teams that need a little something to try to get back on track. Kevin Stefanski is at the Senior Bowl, and he was talking about the Browns, their quarterback situation. We know Andrew Berry was there as well, kind of conceptually talking about their quarterback situation, or what, and not their quarterback situation, I should say, what they're looking for in a quarterback, or what he deems to be a quarterback who can be a franchise guy. And that's tangled. It's a tangled web because Deshaun Watson re-tore his Achilles and had to have another surgery, and so he's not going to be available to start the season, if at all. So there's two teams that are looking for answers, somehow looking for answers. I don't know that I'd put the Cowboys in that same situation, that same boat, but Stephen Jones is trying to explain why they decided to hire Brian Schottenheimer instead of going outside the organization. They stick with a guy who was on Mike McCarthy's staff for the last couple years. And while we're talking about teams that are facing a bit of an uphill climb, well, that certainly includes the Jets and their situation, and their owner, Woody Johnson. He's feeling positive now that they've hired Aaron Glenn, but there's some major question marks there as well. So sometimes remember in sports that misery loves company, and fans tend to have more solutions. It's not nearly as much fun when it comes to, and I'm being tongue-in-cheek, but it's not nearly as much fun when it's a team where everything's working and, you know, you've got great identity and good coaching, and pretty soon we see how quickly that turns to sports hate, if you will, with the Kansas City Chiefs. Speaking of that, I actually saw Travis Kelce responding to this idea that the Chiefs are the villain, and he digs it. He absolutely loves it being the villain now instead of a likable team. Yeah, you stay on top too long and fans, opponents, everybody's gunning for you, want to knock you off. So online at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page as well. Glad to have you with us on what is a Wednesday night into a Thursday morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Rush in the gun. Snap is back on third down. Time. Throws it right corner of the end zone. Lamb, back shoulder. Touchdown, Cowboys. Oh, did C.D. Lamb run a nice route? That's the C.D. Lamb possession. And they got him on Fuller again.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Brad Sham on Cowboys Radio. It was a tough season for Dallas and for the Cowboys fans, of course. Always the debate about whether or not this is still America's team. But they create controversy and conversation everywhere they go. Now, you know the story, the backstory. Mike McCarthy, contract runs out, still in the exclusive negotiating window. The reports indicate that Jerry Jones did want him to return, but they couldn't agree on the terms, whether years or money, couldn't agree. And ultimately, they decided they would go their separate ways. I do honestly believe that happened. I think if they were going to fire him, they would have fired him in a more timely manner where they could have interviewed Kellen Moore. But because Kellen is with the Eagles and because of the window that had already passed during the bye week, they were unable to connect with him and didn't want to wait. So the way that the Cowboys brass navigated this tells me absolutely they were expecting, they had agreed or they decided they'd agree that they would keep Mike McCarthy on, and they expected that he would be in the same boat. McCarthy, for his part, has decided to sit out the 25 season and focus. So he pulls his name out of the running for the New Orleans Saints job, and he's decided to focus on the 2026 hiring cycle, which, as you know, can happen pretty early. It can start pretty early. When did Robert Saleh get fired by the Jets? Week 5? I don't remember one happening that early, but it definitely is a thing now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Brian Schottenheimer gets promoted, if you will. Now, he was on Mike McCarthy's staff as the offensive coordinator. You know the name. He's got an NFL pedigree. He's been in the league for 20 years-ish. Not quite 20 years, but he's been working as an assistant. And so he takes over his first head coaching job, but they like the fact that they know him. They have a relationship with him. What did Jerry Jones mention extensively? That there's a family pedigree there, and he's got the genes, if you will. Well, Stephen Jones, his son, who's also heavily involved in managing and running the team, he was a guest on Sirius XM NFL Radio, and he answered the question of why the Cowboys decided on Schottenheimer.
We just felt like we needed needed some change. We needed the freshness. And, obviously we want to change the narrative. Our narrative is, we hadn't been in a championship game or a Super Bowl in 30 years. And that sits with us, in a hard way. And we know we have to be better. And you can't expect to keep doing the same things over and over and expect a different result.
Isn't that the definition, the urban definition of insanity, is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result? So it's Brian Schottenheimer, and I think people, because of his name, because of his dad, actually are rooting for him. Now, maybe you're not rooting for the Cowboys necessarily. I don't think people want him to fail. It's just, I think it's notable that you hear Steve.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep. Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stephen Jones say we wanted something different, except this guy came off of Mike McCarthy's staff. Maybe by different, he means a coach that, well, a new kind of fresh voice who'd not been a head coach before. because they went from Jason Garrett, who'd not been a head coach before, but was there for quite a while, to Mike McCarthy, who was a veteran, experienced head coach with Super Bowl experience, Super Bowl resume, and now they go to a younger offensive coordinator type who has the pedigree. So I guess you could say in that respect, it's different. But he is from McCarthy's staff, so I don't know how different. Kellen Moore is considered the front runner for the Saints job, though now he's working with the Eagles, of course, to get ready for Super Bowl 59. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'd asked you on the last edition of the show, which of these head coaches that's already in place would have the greatest impact, most significant turnaround in 2025? And there's a lot of different responses. One, I wouldn't say it was consensus by any stretch of the imagination, but one common name was Ben Johnson and the Bears, and the fact that he, for the second year in a row, was so highly sought after, had such incredible success with the Lions, their offense, and of course the team as a whole, getting to the NFC Championship a year ago, and yes, getting upset and having the turnovers against the Commanders, but still doesn't take away from what they did as a team in 24. So I think there's a lot of excitement around Ben Johnson, a ton of anticipation. Regardless of what team he went to, he was considered the hottest coaching commodity. So yes, there's some excitement there. He gets to work with a great quarterback, or a budding young quarterback, I should say, but people think very highly of Caleb Williams after his rookie season. The challenge there is you're in the NFC North, where the three other teams made the playoffs and all had double-figure wins. How do you make headway in that division? But Ben Johnson knows them well. All right, so that's one, let's say, popular answer. But Pete Carroll, another popular answer. Because of his experience, and what have we heard people talk about? Robert Turpin, who was a former Seahawks running back, we heard from him on our last show, and he referred to Pete's passion and energy and that it's real. It's not a fake kind of persona that he puts out there just in front of the microphone. No, it's real, and you can easily follow him around or listen to him in meetings and know that this is who Pete Carroll is. Well, maybe the most prominent, probably the most successful player on the Raiders roster is Max Crosby. And he's part of Let's Go Now, that SiriusXM show that used to feature Brady. Now it's Belichick and Peter King and, of course, Jim Gray, but also Max. Now, Max was at Pete Carroll's introduction, and he and Jim Gray were talking about the hiring of Pete as the next head coach.
I think the number one thing you look at is just energy. You know, we talked about it a few times, competition as well. You know, as a competitor, as somebody who brings energy all the time and lives off that and expects it from others, I love somebody with that type of mentality. So he's a winner. He's done it his whole career, and it's just exciting, you know, to see what's going to come soon.
Well, that begs the question, what does the future hold for this new regime, another change there in Vegas?
The main things that he talked about is we're going right now. Like, we're not wasting time. That's the one thing he mentioned to me after his press conference. We're going to get this thing rolling. So it's exciting. That's my mentality every year. You know, I want to win every year. That's the competition in me. And I see that in him. And I feel like everybody from the new ownership group, from Mark, everybody's on the same mindset when it comes to attacking this new regime.
Max Crosby has let it be known he wants to remain a Raider. He's not interested in going anywhere else, but think about what they went through. Davante Adams wasn't playing, requested a trade, get shipped to reunite with Aaron Rodgers in New York, and all of a sudden he's healthy again. They haven't had a quarterback. They brought in Gardner Minshew. They went to Aiden O'Connell. Aiden got hurt. They turned to Desmond Ridder. Ridder spent some time on the field as well. They went back to Aiden. What a mess. Where do they go now? And that's not Max Crosby's job. I guess it's not in his job description to figure out what they do at quarterback. Though we did hear from Pete Carroll that you can't make that the entire focus of the rebuilding project. It's got to be more than that. You can get too obsessed with the quarterback. Sure, they need one, but there's other ways that they can improve, was essentially what Pete was saying. And think about what he did at the end of his coaching tenure in Seattle, giving Geno Smith the job and not making that the only position on the field that mattered. But I think Max has high hopes that Pete Carroll, as well as some of you, have high hopes that Pete Carroll and his new coaching staff can have an immediate impact.
Vitek and Coach Carroll have brought up, you know, every time I've communicated with them so far, is we're doing this now. Like, we're rolling, and it's exciting to see. And that's what, you know, I'm all about. You know, I don't have forever, you know, to play. So I'm trying to win right now.
Max Crosby, along with Jim Gray and company there on Sirius XM NFL Radio and Let's Go. And I keep wondering how long Bill Belichick will be on that show. Most recently dropping the idea that they should rename the Super Bowl trophy after Tom Brady. So take the Vince Lombardi name off of it, or maybe it's the Lombardi Brady trophy. It's a little verbose. Couple of your responses on Facebook after hours with Amy Lawrence about the team that will see the most immediate impact and greatest turnaround from their new head coach. Lots of Pete Carroll. So Shirley goes with Pete Carroll in Vegas. Marie says Pete Carroll, more power to him. Same thing with James. John goes with the Jets, followed by the Raiders. Interesting, too, a lot of people are excited about the tenacity and I would say some defiance from Aaron Glenn in New York with the Jets. The issue is they have a roster. They've got some great pieces on the roster, but they don't have a quarterback either, unless they bring back Aaron Rodgers. But honestly, I think some people are more afraid that they might bring back Aaron Rodgers and that would actually stunt their growth. Jeff says on Facebook, I want to say the Jets will have the greatest turnaround, but I think the Pats, Patriots, have a potentially great QB and the best new coach. That's referring to Mike Vrabel, who was definitely highly sought after and coveted as well. Rob says the J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 because Aaron Glenn will bring it. And then one more, Joe, actually goes with the Cowboys. Brian Schottenheimer has the most talented roster of any of these teams. He says, I'm almost, I like how he phrases this, I'm almost pretty sure the Cowboys will be drafting Ashton Jeanty at least 12 wins next season. All right, it's ambitious, but Ashton certainly would be an upgrade. At A-Law Radio, and our Facebook page as well. If you missed it, we have a brand new video up on our YouTube channel. It's us on Twitch TV, but it's firmly packaged now there for After Hours on YouTube. And we were going through some fun facts, trivia style, about Philadelphia and Kansas City. And wait until I tell you what I did after the show on Wednesday morning, Pete, once we got done doing our own trivia fun facts about Kansas City and Philadelphia, which, by the way, Pete didn't get any right. Were you completely skunked? You were shut out?
Yes.
I was trying to guess based on how Pete would arrange the answers in multiple choice. Pete wasn't exactly sure. I gave him a lot of numbers. That was the thing. I tried to confuse him and run interference with a lot of numbers.
And it was obvious I was confused.
At A-Law Radio, I stink at trivia, though. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, we also have to reveal your choice for TD of the week. We're a little bit delinquent. It's a Touchdown Tuesday, but, you know, it's Tuesday somewhere. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
We begin with the NBA. We'll start in San Francisco. Andrew Wiggins, 27 points. Warriors over the Thunder, 116-109. T-Wolves top the Suns, 121-113. Anthony Edwards, 33 points. Kyrie Irving with 25. Mavericks get by the Pelicans, 137-136. Now to Philadelphia.
Maxey driving, top of the key area, 5 to shoot. He's still got it between the rings, between the legs, driving to the line, down the lane, up and good. Maxey, too good. Put him on the All-Star team.
Tom McGinnis on Sixers Radio. Sixers over the Kings, 117-104. Tyrese Maxey had 30 points. Now to Charlotte.
Under 2 minutes to go now. 19-point net lead. They've led by as much as 24. They've never trailed. Johnson taking it down the lane to the rim, and he scores a hard driving layup by Keon Johnson. He's got 18 points. And that's most points they've scored since that win in Portland on January 14th.
That was Chris Carino on Nets Radio. Nets over the Hornets, 104-83. Keon Johnson had 18 points. Elsewhere, the Clippers over the Spurs, 128-116. Knicks win their fifth in a row, beat the Nuggets, 122-112. Jalen Brunson had 30 points, 15 assists. Cavs over the Heat, 126-106. Celtics, 122. Bulls, 100. Pacers beat the Pistons, 133-119. The Raptors over the Wizards, 106-82. Indiana Fever star Caitlin Clark will not participate in a special three-point challenge during NBA All-Star Weekend. Reggie Miller will reportedly be the lead NBA analyst for NBC starting next season. College basketball, number one Auburn over LSU, 87-74. Number four Alabama over Mississippi State, 88-84. Number six Houston beat West Virginia, 63-49. In football, the Jets reportedly hire Steve Wilks as their new defensive coordinator. College football, Chris Ash to reportedly be the new defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. NHL in overtime, Penguins over Utah 3-2. Sidney Crosby, the game-winning goal in overtime. I'm Peter Schwartz.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227. Listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
1 minute to beat 10. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1. Touchdown! Southern Salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
People have spoken, and one score stands above the rest. Here is your TD of the week.
Hurts under center on first down. He pitches it out to Barkley. Takes off to the outside. He's at the 50. He's at the 40. He's at the 30. He's going to go. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Saquon Barkley, 60 yards on his opening touch.
A lot of places outside of Philadelphia, you know, aren't the sky ain't falling everywhere. But at the same time, that's why you come to places like this. And it puts a lot of pressure on you. But, you know, we responded and we got together at the bye week and at the team and see what we want to accomplish. And from there, that's kind of when the season took off.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. The voice of one, Saquon Barkley, first year in Philadelphia, and his dream season, his historic season, continues with a trip to the Super Bowl. And overwhelmingly, you named him the Monday MVP and then chose his one snap, 160-yard run for a TD as the touchdown of the week. Merrill Reese with the call on the Eagles radio network. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The Eagles, they went through this terrible swoon, right? A year ago. There's a reason why this is their second Super Bowl in 3 years. They've got really great talent, even as Jason Kelce retired, but the offensive line's been terrific. Some would say it's even better this year, not because he's gone, but just that there's cohesion and consistency. And of course, they're really big men along the offensive line, but you add that Saquon Barkley and man, to take some of the pressure off Jalen Hurst to the point where now people are complaining because he doesn't have enough opportunity to pass or because he isn't taking the opportunity to pass. They know their identity. They are a line of scrimmage, control the line of scrimmage, bash the ball, control the game type of team. And when they have to throw, they've got major weapons. I do think it's a credit to them. I know A.J. Brown, he's had some outbursts on the sidelines. He's very competitive, very passionate. That's where the book comes in, inner excellence. But the fact that he and Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert and the other receivers do not complain about the fact that they're not getting enormous stats, but instead are happy to win and happy to play in a Super Bowl, it's pretty incredible. 855-212-4227. John is listening in Baltimore. Welcome to After Hours.
Hello. How you doing, Amy?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I believe that the biggest turnaround is going to be with the Jets. That new coach coming in there, he's, you know, used to be a player with them. And
Aaron, yep.
Sounds like he's real excited and pumped up. And I believe they're going to have the biggest turnaround. And I also believe that the Philadelphia is going to take the Super Bowl. Saquon Barkley is on a mission, you know, from God. I stretch it a little bit. But I feel that he's really on a mission, and he's kind of like his spirit is with the whole team, you know, and it just spreads throughout, and they're going to take the Super Bowl this year.
Well, we'll see. They were obviously very close a couple years ago in a game that went down to the wire. And
he's the difference.
He very well could be the difference. I think it's good to have the experience that they did. I mean, not everybody was part of that team a couple years ago, but have that one experience, I think, prepares you for what's to come. Mm-hmm. Different venue, of course, but still, it matters that they've been there before, some of them, and now they've got the right pieces in place. I mean, the coordinators that departed after that last Super Bowl kind of left them without an identity for, well, poor hires by Nick Sirianni, but left them without an identity there for a good year. And now they are firmly convinced about, you know, what they are and who they are and how they do what they do. So all of that is very obvious in the way that they win games.
Yes, it sure is. And they may even repeat. I'll stretch it even further.
Well, they can't repeat if they don't win.
Yeah. Next year.
I was going to say, they can't repeat if they don't actually win. So you're counting out the Chiefs.
Not counting them out, but I feel that all the pieces are together now in Philadelphia. And I believe they're the better team, and they're going to take it. That's just my feeling, my belief.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we will see. That's the beauty of the game.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for taking my call, and have a great evening.
Thank you, John. Thanks for listening. 855-212-4227. He mentions the Jets and Aaron Glenn. Woody Johnson has done some reflecting after this season that was, where they fired Robert Saleh, who, by the way, is back on the San Francisco coaching staff. He's returning from whence he came. He was the DC for Kyle Shanahan going back before he took the head coaching job with the Jets. And I don't know, did we ever really see that same guy? There's just a different pressure on the sidelines when you are carrying the weight of leadership and it all comes back to you. I don't know if we ever really saw that same fiery kind of guy. And I've heard some New York fans talk about how what Aaron Glenn has presented already in these first couple of days is what they were hoping they would get from Robert Saleh, but it never quite materialized. Maybe getting too caught up in protecting players. Not that you don't want to do that as a coach, but being... And this is what got Joe Judge, I think, at the end for the Giants, is being a little bit too open, a little bit too conversational, a little bit too candid about what was happening in the locker room. People point back to the relationship and the communication about Aaron Rodgers and him missing what was an inexcused absence during training camp and just different things. There was a whole incident, too, with Robert Saleh where he's fairly open with a member of the media texting back and forth, and that media person outed him on local New York radio. So there are just some areas there where Saleh wasn't as buttoned up. And part of that comes with being a rookie and trying to get established and to also figure out who you want to be as a head coach and juggle all the responsibilities. But Woody Johnson, he also is talking about himself and saying, like, hey, we've got to be better as an ownership group.
I have to look in the mirror and I have to be a better owner. And I'm trying to be better. And I do self-scout. And a lot of people scout for me.
I self-scout and a lot of people scout for him. Now, he had kind of pushed back a little bit on how much he was involved, but he does weigh in about Aaron Glenn and this new hire.
At this stage, it's more of a gut feel. You know, I've been through all the numbers and all the checks and all of this and that. I've got to be convinced that these guys are going to be both great leaders, and that's what I am convinced, that they can do it.
So that's Woody Johnson along with Christopher Johnson Brothers who own the New York Jets. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I will pass this along again next hour, but J.P. Shadrick is going to join us at the top of the hour here, so I want to squeeze this in. This statement comes from U.S. Figure Skating, and it's just breaking in the last few minutes. U.S. Figure Skating can confirm several members of our skating community were sadly aboard American Airlines Flight 5342, which collided with a helicopter in Washington, D.C. We are devastated by this unspeakable tragedy and hold the victims' families closely in our hearts. And they're still monitoring the situation. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.